Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
In modern medicine, we're conditioned to think of our bodies as a mysterious puzzle box for doctors to decipher and illuminate with their advanced machines that can see underneath the surface of the skin or complicated molecular biology tests that can show the imbalance of some enzyme as the flag for oncoming disease. But there is a growing generation of physicians who think of the human body as an open book filled with data that reveals what's happening inside, data just waiting to be mined by scientists who know where to look. The deeply mysterious degenerative nervous disease, Parkinson's, may betray its presence in a subtle change in the voice, long before the signature tremors begin in the hands and legs. Mathematics, in fact, may be a better window on this symptom than complicated MRI machines and brain scans. Mathematician Max Little is a visiting researcher at Oxford University and a TED fellow who has used computers and mathematical analysis of voice patterns to develop a highly promising early test for Parkinson's that only requires a patient to sing. Max Little, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, John.
You know, my dad has Parkinson's, and completely undetected, and to this day they don't really know, you know, where it comes from or what his risk factor might have been. He was in a car accident a long time ago, so there's all kinds of mysteries surrounding Parkinson's. I'm wondering if we could listen to some of the sounds that you're working with in your research, and you can explain what's going on here. We have two selections. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so this, we're told, is the voice of a patient with Parkinson's. Listen. And the ah noise there is an attempt to get a standard sound to do comparisons. Is that the idea?
Absolutely, yeah. So what we want to do is we want to set up a controlled circumstance such that we're isolating the particular features that we're looking for.
And so here's the voice of a patient without Parkinson's. The clear as a bell compares with the wavery first instance. That's a pretty stark contrast, it seems to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in that case, you can actually hear it. It's very obvious to anyone who listens to that. But in many cases, it's not nearly as obvious as that. So that's why you need precision mathematical algorithms in order to detect that kind of thing.
And in the case of Parkinson's disease, an ability to suppress tremors is gradually lost. And the expectation based on your research is that those tremors are going to show up earlier, possibly, in the voice being something of a kind of a seismograph for what's going on inside the brain.
Well, that's what we think may be very exciting. We're not there yet to be able to show whether or not we can detect preclinical symptoms of Parkinson's disease from voice recordings. But that may actually be the case. And one of the things that we're doing currently is we're looking at people who have a particular genetic predisposition to Parkinson's and seeing if, for those who have that gene but don't have Parkinson's, whether or not they display the same kind of vocal symptoms that we're seeing in very early stage Parkinson's patients.
So you're narrowing it down. You take the subset of all humans and narrow it to those who are genetically predisposed to Parkinson's, maybe add a few risk factors, and then you develop a test that for an individual with that combination of factors, if you add this voice test, you really might have something clinically powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is just about combining evidence. So when you combine evidence from lots of different sources, then you can obviously, as you say, you can home in very accurately on a particular category, like whether somebody has a disease or not.
And in a predictive sense, in the narrow domains where you've looked at this as a predictor, how well have you done?
Well, so far in the lab, we've been able to detect from lab quality recordings with about 99% overall accuracy whether somebody is healthy or has Parkinson's disease. But we wanted to test this more latterly in actual outside the lab recordings that you might collect in the wild. Let's say somebody's using a mobile phone. And that's why we set up the Parkinson's Voice Initiative. And we've been able to collect a very large amount of data to be able to start tackling this question. Let's see, it works in the lab really well. But does it work really well when you use, say, a mobile phone connection?
And the idea is to develop an app that would test in the way diabetics are tested on a device that they carry with them? Or is it information that goes into a central database and you do some of the work and research trying to assemble a sort of a broader population sample?
Well, there are two aims, obviously. Like, if we can collect that data, then we can do research with it and therefore learn a lot more about these kind of symptoms. But obviously, as you say, there are lots of clinical applications that once, if we can get a technology actually working like that in practice, as you say, using, say, smartphones or any other kind of microphone-based device, like, say, it could work online with a computer, then, yeah, that's the kind of technology that could eventually end up in clinical practice.
Now, you were working on this research before you became a TED Fellow, right?
That's right, yeah, for about 7 years before that.
And obviously, this research and your career attracted you to the folks over at TED, and you and I both have experience at the TED conference. Hmm. What was it like to suddenly, okay, TED community, give me a hand here. What was the tsunami that hit you like?
It's been incredible. It really has. What just amazes me is the extent to which people are prepared to help in this kind of research if you give them an easy way to do so. And the TED platform, if you like, is a very good way to reach out to people because people know about TED. They watch TED Talks all the time, so they are really keen to see what's going on there and are very keen to support it.
I'm wondering if this story is maybe not completely about Parkinson's, but is in a larger sense, a plea for medicine to maybe get out of the laboratory and to look at the data sets that are all around us, in that we might be better at researching and combating disease if we didn't think all of the problems can be solved with electron microscopes and, you know, molecular tests that involve sophisticated machines like, scanners.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, you know, drugs testing, this kind of thing. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a vast amount of data about people, about their phenotype, about their behavior that we just don't know. And there must be behavioral environmental factors that influence, for example, Parkinson's disease. But because we haven't been able to have the instrumentation to measure it, we just don't know it. We haven't been able to learn about it. So, absolutely, I completely agree with you. I mean, let's start exploring this vast amount of data that's already out there that we can now capture with cheap, ubiquitous devices like a telephone or a smartphone or even the internet. It's a really exciting time, actually, because we're just on this cusp where technology is reaching this point where it's so cheap that we can actually feasibly do that. We can imagine doing this across whole populations now.
A mathematician exploring the vast domain of human data and behavior with just a smartphone. Call him an explorer. Max Little is a visiting researcher at Oxford University and a TED Fellow. His research on Parkinson's disease is part of the wish that he was granted when he became a TED Fellow. Max Little, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.